So, Tony didn't get the set list.
I don't have a set list. What's going on?
So he just played our, that was our sex song. That wasn't our Fuck the Man song. That was our Fuck the Woman song.
Oh, no, it's not the wrong song. Oh, well. We all played it. It's all good.
That's right. Yeah, that was Green Back
Zombie. This is our Fuck the Man song. It's called Green Back Zombie.
Yeah. Super Soul Challenger of the Big Easy. Let's go into now. Let's hear from Dan Merrill with Walking in Memphis. And thanks for tuning in, folks, and stay tuned for New Maine to Speak with Kate. And she's got a special guest, I believe. I think his name is Dan.
No, I'll make you wait. I like to show off and play guitar on this song because it's a piano song. We'd like to do a song here that's from it's a song we both enjoy, and somehow one time at a rehearsal, I think we stumbled across this one and started playing it, so it goes like this.
Shoes and I boarded the plane. Touched down in the land of the Delta Blues in the middle of the pouring rain. WC Andy, won't you look down over me? Yeah, I got a first class ticket, but I'm as blue as a boy can be. Then I'm walking in Memphis. I'm walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam. Walking in Memphis. But do I really feel the way I feel? I saw the ghost of Elvis on Union Avenue. Followed him up to the gates of Graceland. Yeah, and I watched him walk right through. Now secure they did not see him. They just hovered round his tomb. But there's a pretty little thing waiting for the king down in the jungle room. When I was walking in Memphis, walking with my feet 10 feet off a beat. Walking in Memphis, but do I really feel the way I feel? They got catfish on the table, and they got gospel in the air. And Reverend Green, he'd be glad to see you when you haven't got a prayer. But boy, you got a prayer in Memphis. Taylor plays piano every Friday at the Maple Room, and they brought me down to see him, and they asked me if I would do a little number, and I sang with all my might. He said, tell me you a Christian, and I said, tonight, walking in Memphis. I'm walking with my feet 10 feet off the field. Walking in Memphis. Yeah, but do I really feel the way I feel when I was walking in Memphis? I was walking with my feet 10 feet off the field. Walking in Memphis. But do I really feel the way I feel? Put on my blue sweat shoes and I boarded the plane. touched down in the land of the Delta Blues, in the middle of the pouring rain. Touched down in the land of the Delta Blues, in the middle of the pouring rain.
WMPG is supported by listeners and by the law offices of Joe Borenstein. For nearly 40 years, Joe Borenstein has been providing injured and disabled Mainers access to justice through a statewide practice specializing in auto accidents, personal injury, medical malpractice, and Social Security disability law. More information is available online at joeborenstein.com or by calling 1-800-CALL-JOE. This is WMPG 90.9 and 104.1 FM and 281 AC Gorham, Portland. Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. You have been listening to The Locals, a show exploring local music with Isaac. Did you know that you can listen to WMPG from your computer or cell phone too? Please visit WMPG.org and stream us live or listen to previously aired shows under Audio Archives. And you can always find previous episodes of this show at newmainersspeak.com. Good afternoon, I am Kate Manahan, and thank you for joining me for the 7th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants and refugees. This show is about visiting with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today my guest is Abdi Yosef. Abdi is a high school senior from Deering High School in Portland, Maine, and he was raised in a refugee, then an immigrant family, and is here today to share his insights. Thank you for being my guest on New Mainers Speak, Abdi.
Oh, no problem.
It's a pleasure to have you here in the studio this morning, a dreary morning at that.
Oh, yeah.
So, just a little background. Abdi was born in Dubai. His family had left the civil war in Somalia that started in 91. And then from Dubai, they moved to Pakistan and then on to the United States. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So what was it like growing up in a family that didn't necessarily have a place, have a land and a secure status?
It was kind of tough in the beginning, but I feel like our father really taught us like values that everybody keeps now, especially my older brothers and sisters, everybody looks out for each other. And especially in a family that's so big, the older people are kind of passing down information to the younger people. So I feel like even though my father's still not around right now, my older brothers and sisters are kind of my fathers too. And they tell me like exactly what I should do and look forward to in life and everything that makes me feel secure, you know?
Absolutely. Can you tell us what your dad does that makes him not here?
My dad is retired right now. He went back to Somalia last April, and he's older. He became 70, like, I think, March. And he just decided that he wanted to go back where he was born. And since the war was going on for so long, he didn't have an opportunity to. And he had so many children. And he just felt that last April was the right time to go back home and retire.
And can you tell us what he retired from as well?
My dad was a businessman of many sorts. He first started out as a merchant in Dubai. And he traveled all across the world. He went to India and Italy and everywhere trying to provide for us. And when he came to the United States, he was older, but he still went to college and got an associate's degree. And he worked in the taxi business for a really long time, I think 5-6 years since he came here and got his degree. And the work just became too hard for him, and he decided that he should probably stop.
And does your mom work?
My mom broke her arm 2 years ago, so she hasn't been working much lately, but she has been working.
Mm-hmm. What kind of work has your mom done here in the U.S.?
My mom was a housekeeper for a long time. She went into babysitting, and my mom's really good with children. Especially since she raised like 15 children. She has to be, but she raised children for a lot of people, and she was always helping babysitting and stuff like that, and she got paid for it for a while.
Absolutely. I would hope so.
Yeah.
There were the 14, and then there were the ones she got paid for.
Yeah.
Now, you and your mom and dad just have four kids together, right?
Yep.
And then your dad, who is older, already had a family.
Yeah.
And so those kids are grown. So your dad, Abdi was telling me, has kids who are from 33 to age 4.
Yep. It's a huge range.
That's a big family.
Yeah.
And tell us where some of your older siblings live now.
I have siblings in Somalia, I have siblings in Sweden, and I have siblings here in the United States.
And how many cousins, siblings, what's your family group size here in Portland area?
In the Portland area is where most of my family is. I have a lot of cousins, and I have a lot of nieces and nephews. And yeah, it is. Most of my family's here. I have two brothers that live in Somalia right now, and I have two brothers that live in Sweden. And yeah, actually two sisters that live in Sweden, and they have a lot of children. So I'm an uncle to a lot of children. I think over 17, I'm pretty sure.
Uncle Abdi.
Yeah.
That's sweet. So can you tell us a little bit more about what your relationship is like with your siblings, with your brothers and sisters?
Even though they have always been older than me, and they've always been like the 10-year age difference never mattered. It was always like brother and sister type of relationship. I still fought with them. I still argued with them. They still treated me like I was a brother, even though some of them were already 14 when I was born. My sister Kamar, she when I was in Pakistan and my mom was going to school there, and my father was away in Dubai, he was working. My sister Kamar, she was 14, and she really helped raise me, you know, because my mom would leave her with the babysitting jobs because me and my brother were like 1 and 3. My brother was 3 and I was 1. And my mom tells me to this day to not argue with my sister because she was my second mother. Mm-hmm. So I really do appreciate everything that the older ones have done for me. And my older brother, Abdul, who's in college now, we're the closest out of, I'm the closest with them out of all of my other brothers and sisters, because I think we've shared room our whole lives. And to this day, me and him still talk, even though he's like 200 miles away right now. And he's the closest because we're the closest in age. And everybody else is out being fathers and mothers and keeping a steady job and worrying about their own lives right now. And me and him kind of relate to each other because we're in the same age group.
Yeah, you've had a lot of shared experiences as well as age and life.
Yeah.
So one thing that people hear about a lot with immigrants is where the children become translators for the adults, because the kids pick up the language because they're in school every day and around local English speakers. So what was that like for you as a kid, and what was the timeline like for your family learning English?
When I was younger, around the age of 3 to like 10, we always had translators everywhere we went. Not because we asked for them, it's because people just knew, like my mom, she was coming, like in school, if I had a parent-teacher conference, they would already have a translator there. But as soon as we got older and my brother became like 13 and I was 11, we kind of transitioned to translating for my mother. And it's funny because every time Time Warner Cable people are on the phone, my mom just yells at me from across the room. She's like, come here, talk to these people, figure out what they're saying for me. So it's kind of the same still now. And yeah, I do translate a lot for my mother, and sometimes I'm not the most fluent in Somali, but sometimes when I need translating from like uncles or somebody else that calls from Somalia, I have my mom translate for me.
Oh, I like that it goes both ways.
Yeah.
I think I could use a translator too for the Time Warner Cable.
Yeah, those
experiences.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll give you a call.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious how you would characterize your family's thoughts and feelings about education. What does education mean to your family?
Oh, if I can tell you if there's one thing that my whole life I had to hear over and over again, it's been, I didn't bring you to this country for you to have bad grades. I didn't bring you here so you could slack off your education and, you know, all of that. My mom scolds me every time she sees a bad grade, and, you know, it kind of made me appreciate, like, education. And my parents, especially my dad, my dad kind of set a model for me, because he was 62 when he went back to school to get his associate's degree, and he did. And if he can do that at the age of 62, I think I can definitely do it at the age of 18, you know. So education, everybody, even my sister who's 31 years old right now with three children, she's still finishing up her master's degree. And she's going to be finishing up her master's degree probably next year. So education plays a big part of my family. I think every family should have a core where they have education as a value, you know, especially for immigrant families who come here. And there's really no other way to progress in this country without education. It's a value that everybody needs to have, because education is such a widespread need in this country, and there's no like furthering your life if you don't have it.
It's really essential, isn't it?
Yeah.
To have a skill to share with the world, and also that thing that makes you able to share what you were born to do.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we need some tools so we can get it done.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite subject, or you know, what's school like for you at Deering High School here in town?
Oh, Deering. I come across some students who say they don't like the high school experience and whatnot. I really liked high school. My favorite subjects have always been science, and science never came easy to me. It was something that I always had to work at. English and history kind of came more easier to me than science and math, but I really like science, and I really like learning about how natural the world is, and that subject really showed me a lot about the kind of things I want to become later on in life. And Deering is a great school. And I think the teachers at Deering really, really made me understand the difference between just getting a good grade, just to have a good grade, and really getting a good grade because of the value. It made me value my education a lot more when I see the work and effort I put into having my grades. It really, like, the difference between just getting a good grade because you want to be proud of the numbers that you see on the computer, I never did it for that. I did it because I really liked what I'm learning. And I think between my freshman year and now, I think that's what has changed in me the most, because freshman year I was just worrying about getting the good grade. Now I just worry about really understanding and valuing it so later on I can use that education. And I think Deering, and especially the teachers in Deering, have really taught me how to value that.
The real prize is the information that changes your heart and mind.
Yeah.
And the grade is only a quick little thing. It's like a little candy bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like for you being a Muslim in the Portland public schools? I don't know if all our listeners understand, but 1 in 4 students in the Portland public schools is a New Mainer. And we have a large Muslim population, and I wonder what that might look like at Deering High School.
Deering High School is definitely a mix of a big crowd. You see faces from everywhere when you walk across Deering. Somali people, Sudanese people, Burundi people, American people. You have Arab people, everybody. So it is kind of great. It takes a lot of awkwardness away when everybody in themselves is different, you know, and they can speak about their country and they can speak about their experiences. So it gives us a great sense of, you know, individuality in our culture, and it also gives us a great feeling of like coming together as one big culture in Deering. And when I first came to Portland when I was 4 years old and I started going to school when I was older, I noticed that there was a lot less people that were from different countries, and I noticed there was a lot less Muslim people here. So I always had to be the one who had to explain why I was gone from 2 days of school the next day after, because I was gone for Eid. I had to explain to other students I was gone because it was a religious holiday, and I would be the one to tell the lunch guy, the cafeteria ladies, that I couldn't eat pork because I was a Muslim, you know. So now when I go in the cafeteria, then there's a lot more understanding. People know every, like, cafeteria ladies know all the Muslim people's needs and everything like that. And I feel like over the years, the Portland Public Schools have adapted a lot and now have a much bigger understanding of Muslim students and the cultural diversity that has taken place in the last 10, 15 years in the Portland Public Schools.
You're a pioneer. You really helped lead the way for others as they've filled in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to Prism Scott when I was younger, because I still live near Prism Scott. And back then when I went there, I think there was like altogether 5 black students, not students from different countries. I think there was altogether 5 black students. I transferred there when I was in 3rd grade. And by the time I was in 5th grade, it was a lot different than when I first went there. There was a lot more Somali people. There was a lot more Arab Sudanese people. And it just progressed. Middle school, it was a bigger step. There was more and more and more. And it's great, you know, having kind of sense that you're not alone. But at the same time, when people, kids that have grown up here and are Caucasian, they understand more. They know the religion. They know who I am, you know, without me having to go and tell them. And I love the understanding that comes across, you know.
You are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. And if you are just joining us, welcome. Today, I'm having a conversation with Abdi Yosef. Originally, his family is from Somalia, but he's been raised here in Portland, Maine. And he's sharing a little bit about his pioneering days as an early New Mainer, before we had as many in the ranks of our school systems here. So my understanding is that last summer you and your family went back to Somalia to visit family, relatives, and had you ever been before?
No, that was my first time.
Please tell us what it's like to be a child raised in the first world with education and privilege and cell phones and everything else, and what it's like to go back and experience that culture shock.
Culture shock is definitely the right word. As soon as I got off the plane and went into the airport, it was complete madness. I just felt the airport, first of all, wasn't an airport. It was more of a big room where people just came, dropped off the bags, and let people... Like, it was a feeding frenzy for the backpacks. And I was just like, this isn't how it's supposed to work, you know. And then sooner during the week, I noticed a lot of things weren't working the way they were supposed to work because I wasn't, you know, where I was in a different place, you know. And coming from America where everything's kind of set up perfectly, like, I kind of realized when I came back, buildings and all the buildings that we have, the skylines and everything, that's all man-made, you know? And when I went back there, I kind of had a sense of, like, this is natural, you know? This is what it's supposed to feel like. Like, this is what nature really feels like. And walking down the street, I had a sense of, like, why my parents kept speaking so highly about it. It was like, I felt more in touch with my surroundings more than just feeling like it was just a different block. I felt like this is like more of a home, you know?
Were you in Mogadishu?
Yeah.
And is that where your mother grew up?
Yep.
Okay, so Somalia had 3.3 million people in 1975 and now has about 10 million people. It's the 4th fastest growing country in the world. And, did you see that? Did you see densely populated places and?
Oh, packed, packed. There's a market right down the street from where we were staying in the hotel, and the market was not bigger than the Fitzpatrick Stadium. Literally, it was the size of a football field, but there was at least 10,000 people there.
Wow!
Like, It might be exaggerating, but to me, there was more than 10,000 people there. Like, I would be walking, and I would just be carried by other people's shoulders. And the way, if somebody next to me was moving in a certain direction, I was moving the same direction. And for me, my uncle, who went shopping that day to stay together, I think was the biggest challenge throughout the day, because there was so many people. And, yeah, I do believe that it's the fourth biggest growing country. And because when I was in the public transportation system and I was looking out the window one day, I'll never forget this experience. I looked and I saw a girl that was literally my sister's age, who's 4 years old right now. And she had it looked like her mother's like headdress, but she had it strapped around her stomach. And I looked behind her, and on her back, she was carrying her younger sister, a girl that must have been their younger sister. But that girl was like either one or two, you know? And I was just like, and this girl was literally just walking down the street by herself, and she was 4 years old. And my mom would never keep her eye off my sister, who's 4 years old. She wouldn't let her go down the street. We could see her by herself. And this girl's just roaming around the market and places by herself with her sister strapped onto her back. And I looked at that, and I was just like, wow. Like, there's like, I thought the mother must have so many children where she must not, it does not really not caring, but to just like trust her daughter enough to go down the street and buy some candy or something like that by herself with her sister on her back.
It's really different from here.
Yeah.
Yes. What do you think your cousins and the people you met there made of you? What did they think of you?
Oh, I went over there, and it was funny because I met one of my cousins for the first time, and he was the exact same age as me. So, and he was my uncle on my brother's side's child, and he was 17, and I was 17 last year. And I was from the first world, and he was from the third world. And the differences between me and him were just so crazy. I just wanted to stay in my room, watch TV, because I really didn't like being outside for that long and playing soccer. He would come to my door literally at 5 a.m., knock on my door and say, let's go to the beach, we're going to play soccer today. And I would be like, no, I'm still asleep, at least till 10 o'clock, especially when people over there wake up. I woke up at like 6 or 5. I was just like, nah, I'm going back to sleep, I'm sorry. Like, it's not happening right now. And he would always like try to figure out how to use my phone, and he would take me across he would walk me across the markets, and we would go eat like at the stands and grab food off the stands. And he just really, I kind of looked at him as I would be exactly like him if I was here. This is like me in a different country where I come from. Like, if I never left, I would be exactly like him.
And did he have any access to education there in Mogadishu?
He did, but it's expensive over there, because his father, he was just right here. You know how they have metros and yes. They drive buses? Over there, they have miniature buses that people drive, and they get paid like a fraction of a cent in American money, like less than a fraction of a cent per ride. And they had to pay for the car and all of that, and his father just couldn't simply afford the school. So he told his son that if he wanted to get an education, he would have to go and pay for it himself once he grew up. So he really didn't have an education. He had one when he was younger for a time. That's how he knew how to read and write. But he wasn't going to school when I was there.
So of the trip, when you close your eyes and think, I went to Somalia, what kinds of images pop up for you? What are the salient, memorable experiences you had?
A lot of understanding from where my parents' point of view from the country this whole time was, because they would tell me stories and stuff when I was little. They would, like, tell me all of the things that used to go on over there. And I feel like I really understand that now. And if I close my eyes right now, I think of the beach, because the beach was just amazingly beautiful. It was probably my number one favorite place to be over there. Second, I think of just the trees and the land, the landscape of it all, and how beautiful it was. And the third thing I really think of was probably the walls, because I would walk down the street and since there was a war going on there for the last 23, 24 years, the walls were all, they had bullet holes. It was like, there was like bombings that went on. You could see like huge craters in the streets. And I really think of the walls because the beach and the trees and the landscape really gave me the beauty without all of the other things going on. It just gave me the blueprint, the base, the foundation. And it really gave me the understanding. The walls kind of gave me like the story, the background, you know?
The natural world versus the political world.
Yeah.
The realities in Somalia. Yeah. Hmm. That's powerful. Can you tell us here at the very end of our show about your own educational plans and goals?
I plan on going to college next year. I'm planning on getting my bachelor's degree, then hopefully getting into pharmacy school and becoming a pharmacist. I plan on helping my mother for her retirement because my mother hasn't been really able to save up her money because she spent a lot of her money just into us. So me and my older brothers and sisters really are trying to make sure that my mother has a good life later on. She's trying to move to Dubai in a few years. And I plan on just keeping my father's morals, trying to stay in his footsteps, you know, because my father had family values and morals that I really believe to this day. And the number one, my father wasn't always there, but no matter everything that happened, I knew that he wasn't around because he was probably working to make sure that we were financially set. So I just want to keep his hard work alive, you know.
I am sure your parents are both very proud of you. You're very well spoken and brave to come in and share your story as a high school student here.
Sorry.
Good luck at Hussein next year.
Thank you.
Yeah. You've been listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and I want to give special thanks to my guest, Abdi Yosef, for joining me here today. If you wish to hear these fully recorded shows, you can go to newmainersspeak.com. Thank you for listening, and please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. Next week, my guest will be Reza Jalali. Originally from Iran, he is an esteemed writer, educator, and Muslim scholar. Mr. Jalali also coordinates the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs at the University of Southern Maine. And next week, he will be reading from his collection of short stories called Homesick Mosque, which was published in November 2013. So please join us. Up next is Cruz del Sur with Victoria Chicón right here on WMPG. And now we're going to cut to Abdi's choice, a little more Michael Jackson. Thanks for joining us.